Welcome back to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, the former number one Game of Thrones podcast in the realm, now bringing you the best TV shows and movies weekly in an easily digestible podcast packed with laughs by me, Ross Bolin, and of course my dear friend Mr. Barrett Dudley Barrett. Talk to the people.
Oh, sorry.
You, doofus.
Sorry, I was just over here. I was busy hyper-decanting.
Oh, of course.
Wait. Ross, you hyper-decant, right?
You know, I
you
don't.
Wait, you don't hyper-decant?
I don't.
You could be aging your Sprite 10 years in 5 minutes, Ross.
How does this work? Explain it to me.
You have to hyper-decant. You need a hyper-decanter. I don't know why you're not messing around with
this. Had you ever heard that phrase before this week?
Never.
Is it a thing? Is that a real thing, or did they invent it for the purposes of comedy?
They may have invented it just for Connor.
But it sounds like something
that wealthy people
would have.
I was like, that was just one of my favorite scenes of 2019.
Okay,
that was so good.
You have experienced those little decanter type of situations where you pour the wine through them into your glass.
So I've experienced that, and then I've also...
But that's not hyper-decanting.
That's not hyper-decanting. Then I've also experienced... just regular decanting, which when you pour your wine into a big glass bottle with a big wide base on it.
Yeah, love that. It lets it breathe. Yeah, it makes you feel
powerful.
But
no, so I don't actually know if you can decant any more hyperful than that.
this is why I love Connor so much. This is why I love that character.
But you know, if anybody knows about it, it's Connor.
Apparently so.
You know, he's got that, he's so connected in the in those various realms, you know, like
the hyper-decanting corners.
Hyper-decanting, collecting Napoleonica,
yes.
Including shriveled bits of penis, etc.
Why not?
You know?
That's what he do. That's how Connor do.
Yeah.
Today's episode's a good one, Barrett. We've got Succession Season 2, Episode 3, obviously, if we've been making jokes about it for several minutes now. We're starting Mindhunter Season 2.
So, okay, every time... Like I can look at Mindhunter on my the title screen on my TV screen, and I can think about Mindhunter in my head, and it's all okay. But then anytime I'm on Twitter and you guys are like, "Watch Mindhunter," all I can think about when I see it in the text form is Criss Angel's Mind Freak.
It does take a little while to get past that.
And so, to all today, you guys were like, Mindhunter, Mindhunter. And every time I saw that, I was just like, Mind Freak!
Mind Freak. That show sucked. I was not a fan of that magician phase we went through as a country.
Oh, well, then you're going to be really disappointed to hear that our September Patreon is nothing but Criss Angel Mind Freak.
Son of a
bitch.
We're
just going back and rewatching every single episode and talking about our favorite illusions.
Illusions, Michael. I've got to start taking part in the process of approving these Patreon ideas. Obviously, Mindhunter Season 2 has been great so far. We're going to get through a few episodes of that. There's a fucking Breaking Bad movie coming out on Netflix. We're going to have fun.
Oh, yeah, wow.
That's why we're here, to have the funds and gather the cash monies at the same time. So let's get it. Today's episode of OCC is brought to you by Vincero Watches. Vincero's watches are absolutely next level, and at their price point, you will not come close to finding anything comparable. I have the Rogue in black and rose gold, and I can't take it off my wrist. I consider myself to be a watch guy, Barrett, and I have a pretty solid collection going, and I love this Vincero. And at its price, this quality, with the weight of it, it's damn fine looking. You will not find anything like Vincero. Elevate your game with Vincero's handcrafted luxury watches at an unbeatable price. Vincero provides bold timepieces, always putting quality above all else. Whether you're looking to make a statement or add a staple piece, which I did, I would argue the Rogue is a staple piece, Vincero has a watch for you. I cannot stress this enough. Best value in the industry. Vincero exceeds expectations in both style and quality, and as a result has achieved over 16,000 five-star reviews. That's a shit ton. Get your Vincero watch today with a special offer just for the Clam fam. Go to VinceroWatches.com, enter the code DRAGON at checkout, of course.
Dragon.
15% off your order. Worldwide shipping is always free. That's VinceroWatches.com, promo code DRAGON. VINCERO, Watches.com, promo code DRAGON. Barrett, let's quickly talk about what's going to be coming on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles in September.
Okay, let's do that, because I was actually just kidding about the Mind Freak stuff.
Oh, thank God.
Although, if there is
mind freak,
if there's a crowd out there for it, you know, I'm willing to do anything for the cash money.
This is literally, it's part of what you do on this show now. You poke and prod around for random things we could potentially watch to see what kind of feedback you'll get. And the latest is Chris Angel's Mind Freak.
And this is Chris Angel's Mind Freak, yeah. No, but here's what's actually coming on September Patreon. And let me just tell you, most of this is just crowdsourced straight from you guys via the community page on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles.
Yes.
And on Twitter. Now, let me just also say, part of just one broad issue that we have here is that there's just too much TV. We can't cover everything.
See.
So there's some stuff, like I mentioned, we talked about Yellowstone earlier today.
That one's a real pain in my
ass. The barrier to entry is just too high. And I don't know why the Paramount Network, little old Paramount over there, it's not like that's Big Dick Paramount Channel over there. Like,
I don't know what.
Let us watch season one, man. Maybe your channel would do a little bit better.
Yeah, they are one of the many where I'm like, I really got to download the Paramount app. I really got to go. I got to get the fucking Paramount app.
Right, and then don't you have Google Fiber?
Yes.
Right. You can't log into the Paramount app if you have a Google Fiber account. Just like you can't log into it if your cable login is Xfinity, which is the one that I typically use.
Oh, bummer. Is this some sort of conflict they've had?
Yeah,
as companies?
I don't know.
Because
there
was a point where I was allowed to use Paramount.
Okay. I'm not sure that you would be able to anymore. Any further? Anyways, so like Yellowstone is hard. We're also backed up on that one.
My reason for not watching Yellowstone is my dog.
Oh, right.
Because
right.
I tried.
You can't
episode
watch anything
one,
with
I got,
animals.
Well, no, I can't watch anything with too many horses. Like, okay. Game of Thrones was like the perfect amount of horses, right? Like, most of the scenes didn't have horses, then there'd be a scene with 400 horses and it'd be all hell would break loose in my house. Bruce hates horses. Bruce is my small toy Australian shepherd. And I have never seen Bruce as unhappy as the first 10 minutes of Yellowstone, and I abandoned it, and it will be a long vacation, like a week away somewhere, before I'm able to come back to it.
Yeah.
But yes, to your point,
there's some stuff in there that we can't get to, or that we're too far behind on at this point, or that we just simply don't have time for.
Veep is one for me.
So we do the best that we can to like cover what seems to be the most popular things that you guys are watching. So, September, week one, Patreon. We'll be halfway through Succession. We're going in depth.
Depth.
We're doing an extra Patreon episode. For me, and based off of the reaction from you guys, even though there is some anti-Succession backlash now, but that's
what?
The only reason that there can be backlash to something is because it's so popular and so big.
That's true.
Right? Which almost just proved that I know people want more Succession talk.
Now it's big enough to talk more.
Yeah, and I'm ready to give it to you. I don't know about you.
I'm absolutely ready.
Okay, so we got Succession in depth. Then week two, Movie Club. We're going to be doing It Part 2.
I'm stoked.
And we are going to be recording and putting that one out the week after it releases.
Yeah, so you'll have a week.
So go. Well, no. I'm saying you got to see it opening weekend.
Oh, yeah. But then, of course, obviously, you'll have the entire freaking month to see it and join.
And then even if you see it a month later, but as long as you're a member of the Patreon, then it'll be right there for you.
Indeed.
Okay. After that, week three, we are going to broadly cover what's happened with however many episodes of Righteous Gemstones we can muster.
Up to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you watched any of it?
I haven't watched any of it yet. This is not a show. See, this is one where a lot of y'all suggested it. I've heard good things. Going into this, I had no interest in the Righteous Gemstones.
Okay.
I don't know if it was just because I was like kind of tired of Danny McBride's shtick, or if like just like the whole like big church topic wasn't appealing to me.
That seems so ripe for comedy to me.
It does, but for some reason, this just was not pressing any buttons for me. But I've heard enough good things to push it over the edge.
Okay,
so we're gonna watch it. We're gonna start talking about it.
For me, having grown up in a mega church,
sure,
at Second Baptist Church in Houston, Texas, which is, if you Google it, you will see very quickly, it is literally a stadium. It's not literally a stadium. That would be. Joel Osteen is literally in a stadium, the former Summit.
That's right.
But so growing up in a super church, like, I know how much funny shit there is there to be had.
Yeah.
And this cast is good enough, and I believe Danny McBride to be a good enough creative. He's the driving force behind this thing, created the whole thing. That I'm excited, and it's like, it's weird. HBO doesn't have a whole bunch of fringe shows, right? Most HBO stuff you feel like it's the biggest, baddest thing in the world, HBO. But they do. They always have these little sneaky side shows. Netflix, it sort of like took that formula and showed us the most extreme possible version of it with a billion different sideshows. And then they have their few big ones like Stranger Things. But HBO has always had these little sideshows, and some of them end up being like the funniest thing in the fucking world. I mean, at least a couple of seasons of Danny McBride's, oh my God, was it baseball?
Oh, Eastbound and Down.
Eastbound and Down was fucking hilarious for a couple seasons.
Yeah, so we are, I'm going to get into it. And you know what? Because I have low expectations, I'll probably be pleasantly surprised. Yeah.
You'll be pleased.
Anyways, week 4, Hotline Call Extravaganza for the Mollusk Militia
only.
Exclusively.
Yes.
And then...
So you would have to join the Mollusk Militia tier on patreon.com/oysters clams.
To get in on the Hotline Call Extravaganza.
To get the exclusive Mollusk Militia hotline, yes. And to even get the episode.
So that is Succession, It, Part 2, Righteous Gemstones, Hotline Call. If you're wondering what we'll be covering on our ad-based, we will continue to cover Succession. We will continue to cover Mindhunter. And we are slated to talk about The Boys, which...
Yes, finally.
Which you guys have probably been the loudest about. I would say out of all the shows, that's the one y'all have been the loudest
yeah,
about.
Yeah, that's the one I've had the most personal... Like relationships, people say, dude, you got to get into The Boys as well.
So that's that we should be covering that later this month on our regular show.
Fun. Patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. There's a tip jar if you don't feel like having any more content for some reason. Crustacean Nation is just $5 a month to get 3 additional and exclusive episodes of OCC in September. Ad-free, of course, available only on Patreon. And some columns as well. And then there's the Mollusk Militia for our most diehard and loyal fans. $10 or more per month. You get 4 additional exclusive episodes of OCC ad-free in September. Plus, as Barrett mentioned, one of those is going to be the Mollusk Militia Hotline Call Extravaganza, where you will be the only people with access to that number. Let's talk about the big news of the weekend. The fact that there is now a Breaking Bad movie. There's been rumors of this, right? There's been whispers, rumblings. But I think most of us thought, nah, they'll never do this. I don't see them going this way. To me, it struck me as like Vince Gilligan probably wouldn't be on board and that would derail the project. And I just didn't see it happening. But El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie written and directed by Vince Gilligan, which is huge, huge news to me, is happening. This is real. And not only is it real, it's set to be released on Netflix October 11th.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, we're announcing it, and here's a teaser, and then we're going to film it, and it'll be here in a year and a half. They were like, we're announcing it, also here's a teaser with Skinny Pete, also it's coming out in October.
Yeah.
That's tight.
Yeah.
I'm excited. How
that's
like, a level of 8 out of 1 to 10 is where I'd put myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Very hyped. Breaking Bad, to me, top 3 show of all time.
I don't know if our, if anybody... There's probably a large segment of our listeners that don't know about this, that don't know this about me, unless you've been paying attention from the very beginning, then you've probably heard me say something like this. But I am in the camp that was underwhelmed overall by Breaking Bad.
Hashtag blasphemer is what I would say.
Yeah.
You're a blasphemer.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and that's okay.
So
it's not okay.
Honestly, what did you think about the trailer with Skinny Pete talking?
I mean, it didn't do much for me.
It's not that good.
But the thing is, it didn't need to do much for me, really. It's just the fact that, like, I'm interested. Here's the thing. As an idea, this is horrible. This is stupid. You should leave it alone. But the fact that they've got Vince Gilligan writing it, directing it, he had to have come up with an idea that was good enough to execute on screen.
Yeah.
So I think... I don't know. And the other thing is that worries me, like Aaron Paul has not had any success since Breaking Bad. Everything he's done, for the most part, has been a pretty big flop or disappointment. He has not translated to a big silver screen star. This is the case for most of these huge hit TV actors. It happens this way. Not very many of them have a ton of on-screen success after the fact. Like, give John Hamm as an example. He's had a little bit. He's had some. He's done some things here and there. But even John Hamm, not a huge movie career after Mad Men. But that's just a random weird example. The point is, I don't know how I feel about, like, is it like, did Aaron Paul get so desperate that he turned back to need to play Jesse? Or is the idea good enough? And obviously we're going to find out. Netflix, as we've mentioned, will do anything and everything and has the money to do anything and everything. So it being made by Netflix does not guarantee it will be good. That's the thing that I'm suffering with Netflix right now. When HBO puts something out, That HBO stamp of approval lets me know at the very least it's probably going to be worth my fucking time.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen with Netflix. That's not a thing they've embraced. They don't go for quality. They go for quantity. And Breaking Bad was a quality to me. Obviously, Barrett, you're not as big of a fan. To me, one of the best things ever made. Like, it's in the conversation with The Sopranos, with The Wire, with Game of Thrones. This is the other show that's there for me.
Yeah, and let me just be clear. I didn't dislike Breaking Bad. I just think that that the conversation around it kind of like snowballed on top of itself to where everybody was just like way overhyped on it.
You let the overhype get to you.
Which, you know,
it was overhyped.
It was a good, great show. It just wasn't the best thing I've ever seen.
Here's the thing that I would say. I bet you a million people have that take on Game of Thrones, too, because a lot of people who got into it later and sure. Then it had been so overhyped,
yep.
And then it's like the last season was sort of a bummer, and it's like, what the fuck? Was Game of Thrones really that big of a deal? I swear to God, if you, like, Breaking Bad from day one, if you'd watched it or whatever, and had to do the wait between seasons and shit, did you have to?
No.
That was the shit that made it.
I was late. But let me also just say, while we're on the Breaking Bad topic, and then I want to comment on the Netflix thing too, my big issue with Breaking Bad was mm-hmm. that I hated every character. I never found myself able to root for Walt. I thought
you
Jesse
never came
was,
around on Jesse?
I thought Jesse was awful. It's like the only dude that I thought like was like kind of likable was Hank.
Yeah, okay.
You know? And so there's
that's so weird.
The fact that obviously like nobody liked Skyler.
No.
Finn was just like an entitled little twit. You know, I didn't feel any of I didn't feel for any of them. I didn't want to root for any of them, and that's kind of the core of my issue. Now, having said that, I love Better Call Saul. So I believe in Vince Gilligan, absolutely.
You got spoiled, bro. And, somehow you did.
And,
because think about it, though. Succession, these characters are so fucking hateable. Every single one of them's awful as a human.
Yeah, but they're fun. They're fun and funny, and they do funny stuff. And, like, you kind of, like, I don't know, you kind of love to hate them. I just hated
fine,
Jesse
fine,
and Walt.
Fine, whatever.
Anyways, I think this is going to be one of the first big experiments that we get with Netflix paying a lot of money for something that is supposed to be very, very fancy and big.
Yeah.
Because we're going to get this before we get The Irishman later this year.
Yeah.
We don't have any of the Ryan Murphy or the Shonda Rhimes stuff yet, or the D&D stuff.
Right.
Benioff and Weiss. So this is one of the first things that we're getting where Netflix just like plunked down the cash for somebody that is very trustworthy to make something good.
And on a proven brand.
So, I mean, like, I'm definitely stoked for this. I'm definitely excited to see what they came up with for this story.
At the very least, you got to see it as a challenge that you're excited to see if they were able to conquer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I know it sounds like I am, but I'm not poo-pooing this film.
Don't
I'm
you
just,
care.
You know, I'm just tempering. I'm just giving you the backstory about how my personal relationship with Breaking Bad. Speaking of Netflix and doing things differently, Great British Baking Show, or Great British Bake Off, that is coming back to Netflix, and guess what?
What?
They're releasing it week by week, along with the BBC releasing it week by week in the UK.
Is this the first time they've done this?
This is the first time that I have ever encountered Netflix experimenting with a weekly drop like this. So just something else to stay tuned for and to be on the lookout for.
We have gotten to the point of the circle where the snake is eating its own tail, and we've come all the way around from we need streaming on demand all the time back to, well, maybe like once a Wednesday would be good, to like, let's just do every Monday and just scheduling it out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fucking hilarious. Very weird.
Aaron Paul and Emily Ratajkowski made a movie together?
Yeah.
Did it ever come out?
Yeah. It flopped horribly.
It didn't even get released in theaters.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Well, the trailer was like on TV and shit.
Was it?
Maybe they got like zero, or maybe I watched the trailer on Apple TV.
You must have.
I'm always up in that trailer section, dude. I live in that bitch. Because I gotta know, what's coming? What's coming? And most of it, I'll tell you, is shit.
It's true.
It's just really bad shit.
Yeah. How do I see this thing?
I don't know. That one and the Zac Efron DJ movie with Emily Ratajkowski are the two that I was like, I gotta fucking see these
at
some point.
That did come out.
I know. That for sure made it to theaters because I remember it got panned so, so hard. And, I mean, you knew it was going to be the worst thing ever made just from the fucking... You mentioned, before I forget, Better Call Saul. For those of you, if you're just like, I need as much TV, there's not enough, because you're psycho or somehow that's a problem for you. I don't know how that could be possible in 2019, but Better Call Saul is badass. I need to get caught up on it. People worried about Better Call Saul, just like they're worried about El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, that it was a mistake to spin that off. And the first two seasons I watched were fucking phenomenal. Not just good, like really, really good.
Yeah, it's good
and
stuff.
It just happened to come right in that sort of explosion of there are now literally too many shows for us to keep up with. We're going to have to pick and choose.
Yeah.
And somehow Better Call Saul is one of the ones that fell to the wayside with, like, I mean, 40 others over the years that I want to finish still that I haven't gotten the chance to. So I'll get back to it at some point. Obviously the Better Call or the El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. Maybe there will be a Better Call Saul movie one day.
Who knows?
It filming occurred in Albuquerque in November of 2018 under the working title Greenbrier. And by the time the local media made a connection between Greenbrier and Breaking Bad, the filming was pretty much done, according to Aaron Paul. So they kind of got away with pulling a fast one on everybody. Obviously, Aaron Paul will be starring as Jesse Pinkman, and Charles Baker is returning as Skinny Pete. He's the star of the teaser that is available everywhere on the internet. And that's kind of all I've got on Breaking Bad movie, but I'm stoked that it's happening. A little worried, but the Vince Gilligan again, Vince Gilligan being attached to it and writing it and directing it took away a lot of my concerns.
Yeah, that definitely is it's a point in favor.
Indeed.
For sure.
This episode of OCC is brought to you by Felix Gray as well. You may not realize it, but the average American blasts their eyes with bright screens for 11 hours every day. When you consider how much of our day revolves around our devices, that really doesn't seem so crazy. Like, I'm staring at my phone or my computer or my TV or a TV in one of the three rooms that I have TVs at every waking moment in my entire fucking life at this point. And the fact is, we cannot eliminate extensive screen time from our lives. That is just not possible unless you, like, run into the forest and live out a life in the wild, like in that movie Into the Wild, which was tight. But don't do that. Protect your eyes with a pair of Felix Gray blue light filtering glasses available in both non-prescription and prescription. The majority of Americans live with tired, dry eyes, blurry vision, or headaches caused by screens. You know who you are. Most of you are suffering by the end of the day with this. It fucking sucks. Like, after work, when I just want to relax and watch one of these mini shows or movies that Barrett and I watch, and my damn eyes hurt and I've got a headache, I can take out my contacts and slap on my Felix Grays, and within a few minutes, I feel significantly better. The glare destroying technology that they have is fantastic as well. Felix Gray glasses filter out 90% of high energy blue light and eliminate 99% of glare coming from your daily barrage of screens. They use proprietary blue light technology embedded into the lens as opposed to the cheap coating that can easily chip or scratch over time that a lot of the competitors use. Felix Gray is on a mission to make fashionable, high-quality blue light protection widely accessible by offering a variety of frames for all face shapes and style preferences. When you hit their website, you'll see they have every possible face shape, a style for every possible face shape that you could possibly need. I have the Faraday frames in black if you want to see the ones I have. Faraday, F-A-R-A-D-A-Y. I wear them every night when I game or when I watch movies, like I said, because my eyes are worn out from being on the phone and computer all day, and they're awesome. They're sleek and they're effective. Don't go another day looking at screens without the help of some Felix Grays. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/OCC for free shipping and 30 days of risk-free returns or exchanges. That's felixgrayglasses.com/OCC. Felix Gray Glasses, F-E-L-I-X-G-R-A-Y, glasses.com/OCC. Barrett.
Yes.
Let's talk about Secession Season 2, Episode 3. We should probably talk about Boar on the Floor for at least a half hour.
Boar on the Floor!
I mean, we should probably play it. Let's get producer Mike in here, maybe hire an intern or two off South Congress real quick, bring their asses in here and make them play for us, Barrett. Boar on the Floor!
Yeah, this was something. Look, Succession, if they figured out anything, it's that their best episodes are when they figure out a way to put everybody in the same room together.
Yeah, you know why? Because Arrested Development blew that at one point.
And the way they are doing that is just they're is just really, really well executed and fun, and it like kind of breaks it up because it's like, you know, we don't know if this is a week later or a couple weeks later, but it's not like
right. We're
not stuck watching the day to day. We kind of like pop in and get the highlights
of
what's going on.
The important shit. We're not delving into the nitty gritty.
Yeah, this. this episode, you know, we've talked in the last couple of weeks about just kind of like the wealth porn, if you will.
Yeah.
And this one had a bunch of just like one that you were just like kind of like simultaneously shaking your head at, but also saying, God, that's tight. Yeah, I mean, when they pull up in like seven Maybachs, like everybody took their own Maybach to the private jet hangar.
It's opulence.
To go to Hungary.
It's opulence. It's like, dude, it's Watch the Throne. It's the album Watch the Throne. That's what the show is. It's fucking opulence.
Yeah, I mean,
Hungary.
Also, yeah, just a corporate retreat to Hungary. Like, that's
that's what they do, though.
The writing is perfect on this show right now, and they're in a groove, man. They are humming.
And you know, like, okay, obviously this is all fictional or whatever, but the beauty of this show is that there are layers to it, right? Like, you're enjoying the characters on screen. It's very character driven. All the characters are fake, but there are parallels to all of these real life companies and real life media conglomerates and situations and in corporate. Big corporate America, big powerful corporate billion-dollar people, right? That's what we're all here to watch. And when you're watching Succession, or when you're watching Billions, or when you're watching what the fuck was the name of it? What Greed is Good, Wall Street, the movie, or like, I mean, there's been a long storied history of us as Americans being obsessed with this type of opulence,
sure.
And all this shit. I don't know where I was going with that. It doesn't matter. What happened this week, Logan? Now orchestrate. Oh, my point was, they go do shit like that. They go on these insane corporate retreats to Hungary, and they go boar hunting. Where it's not hunting. That's not hunting.
No,
that's murder. I don't know what that is, but it's not hunt. It's not hunting if there's zero skill. If that's zero skill, Barrett, it's the same as the fucking Argentinian dove hunting thing where you go out to Argentina and there's a dude standing behind you loading a shotgun. He hands it to you. You pull the trigger aimed at literally thousands of birds. You cannot miss. Then you hand him the shotgun and he hands you another one. And this goes on and on until you get tired.
Yeah.
That's not hunting. Of course, there's an overpopulation and they're destroying the grubworm community. So it's fine, Jeremy. God, I can't believe we worked in a Wedding Crashers reference. Anyway, that's what makes this show so great. And now we've got like, okay, so the question was, what's Logan going to do to counter the attempted takeover that's taking place? And his answer is to orchestrate a media takeover of his own.
I've got my top team.
Yes, his top team.
Top team.
His top minds.
Top minds.
Yeah, so Royster Waco, they want to spend $20 billion. Well, he wants to spend. Logan wants to spend $20 billion to acquire what's PGM. It's Pierce, right? It's also referred to as PGM. A rival media conglomerate that is considered like the most respected name in news.
Yes.
Which I wish, Barrett, that I could tell you who that would be in the public present
well,
day.
Well, that's how we know that it is a fake company. Because
that doesn't exist.
Because that no longer exists.
We know it used to be like I feel like people used to see CNN as the more like serious network of the few or the four or the whatever. If you're looking at it like from a strictly unbiased political standpoint, obviously Republicans have always watched Fox News and Democrats have always watched CNN and MSNBC and shit.
Sure,
but like as a sort of in the middle guy. CNN always struck me as like the serious one. And then somewhere in the last 10 years, that completely fucking unraveled. Like, that is not even close to being the case in most of the time anymore. Now, they do good work. I'm not trying to shit on all journalists at CNN or anywhere else. But a lot of the time when I turn on that show,
cable news is just hot garbage.
All awful. Just truly terrible. So, point is, PGM is the most respected name in news.
Yeah, I had that exact same thought. Like, Yeah, there's just really no, there's not anything that this could currently parallel, essentially.
We have all fake news, no more real news.
I think that one of the underlying, kind of thoughts here, though, was that if Waystar Royco is on one side, Pierce is on the other.
And the other is the liberal side.
Well,
right?
we don't really know, but sure, probably.
That sort of seems like the implication sometimes.
But that's kind of the implication.
I like the waffling there, though. So, I like that it's not so clear cut.
They don't ever actually like completely spell that out explicitly,
which I appreciate. By the way,
but the fact of the matter would be that joining these two news corporations together would be a major conflict of interest because then one company would run both of them. When they're supposed to be kind of like
unbiased,
balance each other out.
Yeah,
yes.
Which is the other massive, massive problem. If I learned anything in college, this is one of the very few things that stuck. When I was in journalism school at Texas State, mostly they're like, here's how you indent a new paragraph. But then they teach you some shit one of the many things we learned was about how some of the modern issues in media and in big news have cropped up. And this was, you know, 10 years ago before it's gotten as bad as it is now. But even then, it's because you have these billionaires who own like three of the biggest networks in the world. And then it's when it comes down to it, push comes to shove, it is literally one human being who has the power to influence like 50 million viewers on the news, gets to decide what they're going to see and what they're going to think. And now that's gone all over the place, and it's become a much bigger deal on Facebook, as we know now, and all that. But anyway, that is the thing that really happens. These crazy-ass corporations buy other $20 billion corporations just for shits and gigs because they're fucking crazy people. Greg meets with that reporter for the pre-meeting. Greg continues to be flawless comedic relief on this show. Like, I mean, this dude is so goddamn good at being a gangly funny person. And the way he keeps trying to explain to the reporter that it's a pre-meeting, and at no point does he say what you have to say. For the record, if you ever, the words are off the record.
Yes.
We're off the record.
This
so if you ever
record.
Talk to a reporter, all you have to say is, we're off the record, this is off the record, and you're good. But if you don't say that, they don't have to take it off the record. If you say something, you can't retroactively be like, no, never mind, I don't want that on the record. That's not how journalism works. They go by a code. This is the other thing I learned at Texas State. I don't follow that code, just for the record. But Greg obviously kind of gets himself into a fucked up situation here where he thinks he's, I don't even know why he agreed to do it in the first place. He's just a goon.
Yeah, that's a good question. Why did he agree to take the pre-meeting?
Maybe because he felt important.
Like, probably.
I'm part of the family. Holy shit. They
well,
want to
yeah, I think, yeah, that's, I think that's a good, that's a great point. That's exactly what it was. And he shows up in his, like, his fanciest suit
yeah.
and tries to act like he's an executive.
Yes.
So the fact that somebody actually gave him a call makes him feel important and that, yes. and he
which
leans
is
right
often
into that.
How
yeah.
you get whistleblowers.
Yeah.
And this lady clearly knew he was a dipshit, by the way. Like, she's like, oh my God, he showed up in a fucking suit. Like, what a dick. By the way, I thought it was interesting that Tom did not rat Greg out.
Super interesting.
For this.
This was shocking.
Everything we know about Tom
yes.
tells us that he is the guy who will
yeah.
fuck you if it's you or him.
So let's jump forward to that real quick.
Let's
and,
do it.
And talk about the reasons why he didn't rat Tom out immediately.
Okay.
So the most obvious one would be that he now has this in his pocket.
Yes.
Now
he already
now Greg owes him big time.
He already had Greg as sort of like a secretary type of situation
yeah.
sort of dude. Now he might have his own Kindle style reek. You know what I mean? Like he owes him big time.
He owes him big time.
Not as big as Kendall owes his dad, but big
but
time.
But I do think that something else was playing a part here. And I think that like let me see if I can connect these dots. But Tom was pressured to do something that he wasn't interested in doing by Shiv,
right?
Who is supposed to be on his team. They're supposed
right.
to be working together. And in the entire run up to that trip and in all of the ways that she has been acting towards him have like been pretty fucked up for a wife to treat her husband. I mean,
awful.
He has straight up been her employee and she's not doing a great job of hiding.
No, well, at this point,
that, like how she feels about that either.
Dude, with Shiv, it's like their relationship is so cemented and it's like she's gotten away with that dynamic
yeah.
for so long that now it's shameless. Like she's not even fucking, she literally does not care how he feels, it seems.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I feel like that there was some, I think that played a part in it. Like like Tom with Shiv on his side would have just thrown Greg under the bus
but
and
now,
like made a move for himself. But it was almost
the Shiv
like,
thing, yeah.
like whether that had just kind of thrown him off or whether he kind of like felt I don't like Greg was more in his corner than Shiv was.
Well, I feel or... he's like in a moment of weakness he's like he needs if Shiv is slipping, which she clearly fucking is, like if Tom and Shiv, I don't see them mending their relationship. She seems to now be focused on bigger, better things.
Yeah.
And Tom is not really important to her anymore.
Right.
She's like with everything she's told him the last couple weeks, has just been like, oh, yeah, just pushing him into a corner, bitch.
Yep.
Oh, my God, we're going to make you head of news. And then she goes and tells her dad, like, let's do away with news entirely. It's like she's been so used to that dynamic that now it's shameless, and he's just sort of been accepting it. But now you get the feeling Tom is starting to get annoyed.
Yeah.
And I love that look at it that, yeah, he probably felt more alone in that moment.
Right.
On Boar on the Floor than he has in the whole time we've seen him on the show, because he's always had Shiv seemingly in his corner. But maybe that's why I didn't choose to write him out, write Greg out. I don't know. But also, I think the more obvious reason, now he has this to use against Greg. And just to be clear, it was Roman that was the rat, right? Like, there was so much going on, and I was laughing so hard that I was like, at the end, I was like, wait, okay. So
Roman screws the pooch.
Accidentally,
By trying to backdoor the deal on his own.
So he could impress his dad.
So he can impress his dad, and because he's pissed that his dad is bringing Frank back.
Right. Frank. I love Frank. Yeah. Frank's great.
Who he hates.
Yeah, he's also pissed about Kendall getting the respect that he's getting.
So he's trying to pull a big boy move, and it backfires.
Yeah. Okay, got it. That was a little confusing. If he wanted to hand PGM to Logan to convince him that he would be the capable successor, rather than Kendall or Shiv. Obviously, no one is aware of Shiv's behind the scenes choosing yet,
right,
as a successor. And she is starting to figure out a little bit, I think, more and more, that this old man may be just sort of using her a bit.
Yeah, yanking her chain.
The situation might not be so gold as she may have anticipated or felt initially. But also, from the get-go, she did say, like, she has said multiple times that until it happens, like, she won't even believe it, basically.
Right.
Like, that she needs to see it happen. By the way, Shiv does not have to play boar on the floor. She just hangs out with what's her name? The prostitute.
Willa,
who has the best job in the world, by the way. Willa gets to go watch all of this nonsense with these wealthy psycho people, and she gets paid to have sex with, what's his name?
With Connor. And she gets to try to put her, Connor's producing her play to try to get it to Broadway.
Yeah, you want to get to Broadway.
Yeah, you just gotta get to Broadway.
Fucking Connor running for president. I'm so psyched about that storyline, dude. Like, because now we're making fun of big corporate America billionaires and poking fun at their and how ridiculous their lives are. And now we're going to have one of them do the thing that ridiculous billionaires do. They run for fucking president. And sometimes they win. And I cannot wait to see what they do with Connor there. You know they're going to give him some success, like, to make fun of the fact that any moron can run for president in 2019.
That seems likely.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that has to be the angle, I hope. Or they'll just...
Unless it's more of a foil to moves that Waystar's trying to make. They could go either way with that. Either way, it's great. And I'm glad that he released the Instagram video without permission.
Yes, that was fucking hilarious. That was so, so, so funny. There was one line I wanted to touch on from when Logan is trying to figure out who betrayed him and he's addressing Kendall. He said, well, it's just... Historically speaking, when I'm betrayed, it's usually you, which was fucking so good.
Yeah,
like
sick burn.
When you said the show is hitting on all cylinders writing-wise right now, just Google, like, best lines from Secession Season 2. And just the 50 best lines that we've gotten so far will make you, you'll be rolling by the time you're done reading them all. It is so well written. There's so many biting, witty, fucking spiteful lines from character to character. It's great shit.
Did you watch the Inside the Episode piece after this episode?
No.
Okay. So this was an interesting piece of insight. When I was watching the lock-in, if you will,
right,
at the banquet hall in Hungary there.
The Hungarian castle. Yeah.
One of the things that I felt like that was kind of, you know, it was hitting on a theme that the show likes to do, which is, when you're in an inner circle like this of this eccentric, crazy, ultra powerful billionaire, you get there's a lot of nice perks.
Oh yeah,
you just flew to Hungary on the PJ, champagne everywhere, banquets,
best
just
food,
the nice
best
stuff.
Food money,
like,
can buy.
By the way, I mean, the style this past episode was just killer as well. Like, everybody is so perfectly outfitted in, like, exactly what they would be wearing as a rich asshole.
People won't shut up, like, about Shiv's hair. How much they love it.
Dude, yeah. And what she's been wearing, too, that kind of oxblood leather jacket, that was dope.
Did they have that level of the fashion down last season? I feel like they really stepped that shit up.
I believe that they have stepped it up. There's a lot, because there's been a lot more, like, a lot more high-end casual wear.
Right.
And not all just corporate.
I feel like last season
suiting
was all Armani suits,
yeah.
And this season has been like gotten a little more into the fashion of what wealthy people actually rock,
right? Like outside of the office. But yeah. So you, it's you know, that part of it looks really attractive. And then you get locked in a room with a guy and you're suddenly like a pledge again. And you're in this just the most terrifying and awkward situation you could possibly be in. Like, this is awful.
Like, that
this
felt like
horrific.
That felt like it could end with one of them being murdered. And I wouldn't have been like totally shocked. Like,
yeah, if they decapitated the rat.
They
definitely would have been able to cover it up and sweep it under the rug as well.
Clearly, yeah.
Hungary doesn't care.
They've done it before. They're not even in America.
So that was like, I just kind of appreciated the kind of showing you all the things that you'd think you'd like about it.
Well,
and then being
that's
like,
also why,
and now here's the other side that you have to deal with it.
That's why people get sucked in, though, is because I don't think many people probably look at it that way. But when you're watching the show and you're getting to see all of the incredibly fancy, wealthy, opulent things that these people are doing, driving around in Maybachs, flying private jets, going to foreign countries for random retreats, all the beautiful banquets, throwing out fucking lobster because because it sat in the stink. that shit is. I mean, that's a crazy, crazy, crazy world to get a view into and to look at. And it's what those things, though, are what trap you, because you think, how do these people all make such morally corrupt decisions constantly? How could you let yourself be party to such a massive machine that's ruining the world?
Right.
Well, the answer is it comes with a lot of really badass stuff.
Yeah.
And that stuff can be extremely distracting. And the second that you lose yourself to it, it's over. You're fucking done. Until you find yourself playing Boar on the Floor and you're like, oh my God, how did I get here? What the hell? How do I get out?
You're oinking for your sausage and, you know, you don't have a pot to piss in.
I was waiting for somebody to say, fry, piggy, fry, like they say in the
Days and Confused,
but nobody ever did, which is sort of a bummer. Like I mentioned, you do get the impression that Logan might actually, well, I haven't mentioned this yet, he might actually reconsider Kendall at this point, because he would be able to 100% control him and actually be running the company still, sort of like a Tony Soprano, Junior Soprano type of deal. If you remember from early on in The Sopranos, there was a point where Tony allowed Junior to be boss, but only in title, really. Tony's making all of the decisions. Junior essentially served as a bulletproof vest for the feds. Like, when they came for the top dog, it was going to be him instead of Tony. That is sort of the situation I think Logan might find himself in here. It's like, okay, let's get Kendall in there, but I'll still be running the show, and he takes all the heat. I could see a situation like that unfolding.
Whether it's kind of like that the bulletproof vest, the protection from some type of investigation, I'm not sure, but I'm absolutely getting those same vibes that you are. We're like, is Kendall going to sneak back in here because he's suddenly a very effective puppet?
And did he see that angle from the get-go? That, okay, fine, the move now, be dad's puppet, do everything he asks, and I will be reconsidered, because he would reconsider, obviously anybody in that position would reconsider if one of the people you're considering is suddenly doing literally everything and anything you ask.
Yeah.
With no questions, you know what
I mean? And doing it well.
And doing it very well, very effective.
He's a very efficient and effective capo right now.
Ruthless. Fucking.
Is it capo or capo?
Capo.
Capo.
Capo, yeah. Capo.
No, that's capo. What you put on a guitar to make the pitch higher.
Okay. So through what? Three episodes
three
of the
episodes.
Season, things are humming. We're going, we're doing well.
We are doing well, yeah.
We're doing well. I'm where I want to be. I'm not like overly fucking like, this is the best season of TV ever. Nothing like that, obviously, but I'm feeling it. I'm enjoying it. Sounds like you are too.
Yeah. You know, we talk about this sometimes on the pod, but it's like zero hesitation to sit down on the couch and pop this show on.
Feels good.
I'm like ready to go. Like, give me more.
When it ends, you're sad. Yeah.
Yes.
You want more.
Yes, exactly. And that's obviously, you know, one of the biggest signs that a show is just really kicking it into high gear and is very entertaining. And I think this one is just smart on a lot of levels. Writing's killer, acting is still really good, and I'm disappointed that this season is only 8 episodes instead of 10.
God.
Yeah,
I wish we could stop reminding ourselves of that. But let's move on to Mindhunter, shall we?
It.
Today's
yeah.
episode of OCC is also brought to you by Honey. 9 times out of 10, shopping online beats going to the store, right? You don't have to drive anywhere. You're not dealing with pushy salespeople asking you if you need help every 10 seconds. It's just nice to shop from the comfort of your damn couch. But 9 times out of 10, you're overpaying when you shop online, unless you use Honey. It's a free browser extension. You just go to joinhoney.com/dragon and download it. And then anytime you shop, it helps you save money. This is what Honey does, okay? It finds you discounts and coupon codes, scours the entire web to find them for you, the active ones that work, and then it applies them automatically. It's pretty fucking snazzy, Barrett. Your old shopping ass is going to be saving major cash monies with Honey, eh? You fucking know it.
Yeah. I do.
Just think.
More honey from my pot.
If you're one of many people listening right now who shops online and not goes to the mall or some dumb shit anymore, think about how much money you could be saving if you used Honey. The average Honey user saves about $126 per year. That's like 25 cups of cold brew, or 2 years worth of ad-free OCC on Patreon, or half a college textbook. Over 10 million people are already saving with Honey. Honey has over 100,000 five-star reviews on the Google Chrome store. 100,000 five-star reviews. Time Magazine calls Honey, quote, basically free money, end quote. There's literally no reason not to use Honey. It's free to use. Installs on your computer in just two clicks, and it'll give you money so you can save and treat yourself to something nice. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/dragon. That's joinhoney.com/dragon. joinhoney.com/dragon. Mindhunter, Barrett.
Yes.
Mindhunter is back, baby!
It is.
I fucking love this show.
Yeah, we're three episodes in, and...
You're three episodes in.
I'm three episodes in. You're about five episodes in.
I'm actually eight.
Eight. Wow. So you only got one left.
I've made a lot of mistakes over the last few days. One of which was not being able to stop myself. to be clear,
guy over here couldn't finish Dark, but you're almost done with Mindhunter.
Mindhunter is part of the reason I didn't finish Dark. By the way, we're going to be talking about Dark next week. Because I got to dude, this show. It's like. I usually say the darkness in big chunks is bad, not to binge watch Dark, not to binge watch Mindhunter or Black Mirror or whatever. I can do it. And it's because I fucking love serial killers and I'm obsessed with them.
You do. You do love serial killers. I just have a few comments, I guess. I'm kind of with you that this might be binge worthy because I'm three in. And number three was the first episode where I kind of felt like we finally like got something going.
That's where it starts rolling
with the Atlanta case.
That's why I got fucked.
And I want to kind of draw a little bit of a parallel here to Dark, because there's something that I think the two shows share moving from season one to season two. So in Dark, the first season was all about revealing the crazy cycle, right? Like over the course of 8 or 10 episodes, we learn that something weird and time travel-y and supernatural is going on in this town.
Yes.
Season two, cat's out of the bag. So shit gets weird.
Very,
you know what I mean?
Very, very weird.
Because now they're just dealing with the table that they've set, right? So with Mindhunter, season one was so much fun and so enjoyable. Not only because of all the serial killer stuff and all like the cool, like, you know, dark, like case solving.
Yeah.
But because you're watching them, like you're watching kind of a historical, a piece of FBI history.
Right.
With these guys like coming up with the behavioral science unit and like defining what a serial killer is and creating these new methods for interrogating and studying and catching them, basically.
Yes.
So moving into season two, like, again, that table is set now.
Right.
And so... through three episodes, or especially through two, I was kind of like questioning, like, okay,
where are
so
we going?
What are we doing here then? Yeah. Are we just going to like, am I watching this show because I like watching them talk to the serial killers?
Right.
Or are they going to like, I don't know. It's just kind of like.
I feel like season one did sort of the same thing to me though.
Through three, like three, I feel like we kind of finally jumped off into this Atlanta child murders thing, which I imagine is going to carry a bulk of the. Of the season, if not, if, or at least the middle part of it.
Right.
So
it definitely becomes more of a focus.
I don't know. There's nothing that's kind of, we also had Holden and his girlfriend in season one.
Yep.
Which was kind of like an interesting side story. Gave it like a little personal touch.
Well, I'm sure we'll get, dude, we've already got this season, at least hints through three episodes that Carr is going to be
bartender.
Delving back into the relationship pool. So there's going to be some more character driven story stuff on the sides.
Which has felt like that, and that little beeline has felt like an afterthought in the first three episodes.
Well, that's literally the only thing she does. In the the first three episodes.
That's and like I'd, the only I, you know, I'd like with her. I'd like for them to just kind of like start splicing that in if that's a story they want to tell, because I'm here for it.
It definitely is.
But
it becomes
a
bigger
part. But stop just like tagging the end of episodes.
So I think that's the thing here. We're kind of covering the three we're covering today. Episodes 1 through 3 is what we're going to discuss today. So if you haven't seen 1 through 3, obviously we're going to be spoiling. Come back after you've watched them. And I will be sticking to my outline very tight so that I'm not adding anything in from anything after episode 3, okay? What was I saying, though?
You were just agreeing that, like, through 3...
Yes, okay, so that's sort of the way it went with the first 3 episodes, and I completely agree. And I think because I experienced that last season, I was sort of ready for it. And after 3, for sure, if you've only watched 3, you're like, well, damn, not a whole lot has happened yet.
Right, yeah.
In terms of important shit. And you really, like you said, Carr is very much like a side story, barely even mentioned, barely even part of the thing at this point. But it builds, and it starts to snowball, and then it really gets fucking crazy. So if you are one of those people, I usually say 3 episodes is the cutoff on how long you should give a show before you judge it. But in the case of one like Mindhunter, where it's a more of a slow burn, and it's more about these little individual conversations and shit, I don't know if that's necessarily fair. So,
well, I mean, and this is season 2 as well. So it's like,
yes,
if you're already here, then you're probably in it.
And then I'm like, lock in, yeah.
And I've liked the 3 episodes. I still think that the show is extremely well done. And you got David Fincher directing at least episode 3. I noticed him on his name on episode 3. He might have directed 1 and 2 as well. So you know, it's just like they're operating at a very high level here. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, like it's easy through 3 episodes to kind of find this critique where it's like, well, what do you want Mindhunter to be about?
Right.
Do you want it to be about like the personal lives of Holden and Tench and Carr, or do you want it to be about like solving cases, or do you want it to be about like the development of the behavioral science protocol and like how that all worked, or do you want it to be about all that? And right now I'm not like through 3, they don't do it, it's not an A+ job of like tying all those threads together.
It's more of a mixed bag, but where you don't know which one's more important,
exactly,
or what's going to end up mattering, sort of. Yeah, no, I mean, for sure. Let's dive into episode 1. Of course, we open in Park City, Kansas. I love how when they do the cities, it's full bold text as large as the screen will allow.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's screaming it at you. Every time that happens now, Taylor and I both laugh because it's so unnecessary and absurd. The BTK killer's wife, in about an 8-minute slow motion scene, walks in on him masturbating with a rope around his neck tied to the bathroom door, and he's wearing a weird mask. She obviously freaks out.
Yeah.
And runs, and he like chases her like, honey, oh, I was just goofing around. Well, he wasn't goofing around. He
little autoerotic asphyxiation, huh?
It's a little chokesturbation, bro.
Yeah.
That's how it goes sometimes, you know? BTK killer got to get his. By the way, the entire point of the slow sequence of revealing, I made fun of it being saying it was 8 minutes long. The slow sequence of revealing the activities of the BTK killer is to show how normal Americans were becoming serial killers. That he was a normal American suburban dude, right? It serves to remind us what the show is about, which is like monsters living among us, how they came to be, why they came to be, and the horrific things they did, and how those things can be used to potentially prevent future similar situations. Like, that's the root of everything that they're doing in the behavioral science unit and the show as a whole. And so getting these little snippets of the BTK killer, it's been one of the things that has frustrated me about both the way they operated season 1 and 2 with this show, is that, to your point, when I'm thinking about Mindhunter and what is it about? Is it about the forming of the behavioral science unit? Is it about Holden? Is it about Tench? Is it about Carr? And then also, there's the fucking BTK killer.
Yeah, BTK out there.
And I'm like, all right, so at what point, because at this pace, it'll be season 9 before we encounter the BTK killer. So at what point do those things become more intertwined? And they're finally fucking starting to.
Yes, yeah.
So that has been promising for me as well. Because obviously, Bill goes and starts to get, well, let's talk about it. So the BTK thing is a cold case at this point. Very important to remember. That is not something being actively investigated. It's being brought to their unit because it's dead. Nobody has a lead. Nobody has shit. The last time BTK struck was a failed attempt at a murder, which gives an opportunity for some investigation, obviously, and we're going from there. He has not struck in a long time, and Bill and Holden and Carr and them are going to have to look into it. Tinch is working like, 65 hours this week, he says, when his wife is telling him he has to throw a cookout and entertain these guests. The only part that matters from this little the party is his guests are fascinated by his professional career.
Yeah.
Right?
As you would be.
Of course.
You know?
They cannot believe he sat in a room with Richard Speck. Bill's wife is like trying to redirect the conversation, but the husbands all insist on asking more.
Not happening.
Yeah, fuck no. And that's how it is. People are enthralled by these serial killers. And this kind of poked fun at how, as a society, we've become obsessed with these documentaries about serial. Like, have you seen the latest documentary with the serial killer? Like, Aziz Ansari has a whole bit in his latest stand-up about how it's sort of weird to be like, have you seen the latest doc about the six children who were murdered? Like, because that's unusual, but it's something that we as a people are become fascinated by. What is my point here? Oh, so yeah, it just sort of gave us a little poke there as a society. And then at Quantico the next day, Tinch is called before Chief Shepard. And a big moment here, Chief Shepard is retiring. And we get to meet the new chief, this guy named Ted Gunn. Huge wrinkle in season two, Barrett. Thrown in immediately. Ted Gunn. This guy ends up being the surprise of the season for me thus far. A boss who supports his squad? Like, this is different than any other law enforcement boss in any show or movie ever. They went, like, a totally different direction with it. He's supportive. He's all about it. He fucking loves it. He wants to nurture Holden and protect him.
Yeah, they're playing some real dark music, though, whenever he, like, talks. And he's also bald, which, you know,
doesn't bode well for his character. No, it doesn't. it's funny you say that, because you keep thinking to yourself, like, all right, what's your catch, guy?
Exactly.
Why are you being so nice, guy?
Yeah.
And,
looking like Dr. Evil out there.
He really does have a little bit of Dr. Evil to him. He's Dr. Evil or the guy from Sex and the City / Californication. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
It makes me think of him, too. Anyway, this dude is there because he wants to take their methods and make them practice. Okay? He wants to take the shit that they're coming up with and make it applicable across the FBI and turn it into something that can be useful in law enforcement elsewhere, yada, yada. A big part of that to him, he explains, is harnessing Holden's instincts. He sees Holden as the sort of golden goose of the unit, right?
Holden is Antonio Brown here.
Yes.
And despite the fact that Holden really wants to play under a helmet that is no longer safe.
Yes.
You got to keep that guy happy because he makes the team.
Makes the cash monies and the catches and exactly. you need him happy. Yeah, despite the fact that he gets into the cryo machine without shoes on and gets frostbite on both of his feet as a result, you need to keep that guy happy. So Bill Tinch is the guy that needs to keep Holden in line. That is what their new boss, Ted Gunn, I like his name, by the way. I love all their names, really. Bill Tinch, Ted Gunn. Fucking cop names, bro. Good shit. Tinch gives Agent Ford Tinch tells Gunn that he gave Agent Ford a couple days off because he's dealing with some personal stuff or whatever. Yeah, we find out that personal stuff is Holden. He's in the fucking hospital because he had a panic attack after he was hugged by Kemper, which made me think, like, holy shit, did I ever get hugged by a serial killer? Because for what, 20 years, we've been 12 years now, we've been trying to figure out why I have panic attacks. Barrett, maybe I was hugged by a serial killer.
I don't think you have been.
Damn it.
It's possible, though.
Damn it. Yeah, the odds aren't great in my favor, but I thought it was sort of a funny reason to have Ford spiral into panic disorder because he was hugged by this gigantic bear of a serial killer.
Yeah.
And he's still in the mental ward for observation because it's the fucking 70s, first of all, and because he's still experiencing episodes, and he's tied down for his own safety, which I have to imagine was pretty fucking terrifying and did not help the situation as a person who has had a panic attack. If you tie me down when I get untied, I'm going to eat you.
That seems like it would exacerbate things.
It doesn't help, Barrett. I don't think it would help. So Bill has to come pick Holden up. Oh, by the way, the doctors tell Holden to avoid stressful situations. He interviews the most dangerous people on the planet, point blank, face value. He can't avoid stressful situations. So like I said, Gunn, incredibly supportive of Holden. He's looking to move forward. And he asks Holden Ford what he wants more than anything, right? Who does he want? If he could get anybody, who would it be? Of course, the answer is Charles Manson.
Indeed.
And of course, this lines up perfectly with when Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is out, which, by the way, we discussed on Patreon in August. It was our movie club movie for August on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. If you go join right now, you can listen to Barrett and I discuss Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. just kind of good timing here. Obviously, we are very much looking forward to meeting Charles Manson and whoever plays him in the episodes to come.
Same guy that plays him in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's fucking hilarious. Did a very good job and got cast again. The one thing about Manson, though, when Holden goes and tells the squad, oh my God, we're going to get Manson, Carr is like, well, wait a minute. He's not technically a serial killer. He's never killed anyone himself.
Yeah.
Which is always the really weird thing about Manson.
That is a weird thing about Manson.
He never put his hands on anybody because he was a pussy. Got other people to do it for him. He was just a psycho. I shouldn't call him a pussy. He was a psychopath. After Shepard's retirement ceremony, Shepard lays into Ford, and we find out, no, he is not willingly going into retirement. He's being forced out for taking the fall for Ford's OPA investigation, allegedly. And he's furious, obviously, freaks out on Ford, calls him all kinds of names, and sends him spiraling into another episode of Panic. And that's sort of where we close out episode one of season two.
I suspected that he was, like, kind of being forced into retirement.
You never got an inkling of an idea this man was on his way out, and then suddenly all his boxes are packed.
Yeah,
and it's like, wait a minute. So, yeah.
Also, like, it could be worse, Holden. You know? That shouldn't have triggered a panic attack. You're still there.
I think he's just in a fragile state.
He's fragile right now.
Where he's like, anything that you...
And later we talk, you know, he gets his groove back, so...
Yes. Yeah. Well, so. Let's do it. Episode two. Tinch meets with agents in Kansas about the BTK killer, all right? So we start to get some of our information here. It's starting to tie in. It's becoming part of the fucking actual episodes instead of just these little windows. He asked to see the house where the Otero family was killed, one of the infamous BTK killer's murders. It was his first confirmed murder, in fact. And even though that year is now 1977, the house still hadn't sold or found new owners because people are too scared to move in there because four people were murdered inside.
Yeah, I mean, I still wouldn't move into that house.
No.
You kidding me?
No, dude, 2019, if they were like, hey, listen, one of the things we have to disclose here is that this is the house where the Otero family was murdered. We actually burned down the house. We sanitized the entire lot and then built a brand new house. I would still not live in that fucking house, dude.
Yeah.
No, thank you. So there's no new leads or clues into the investigation of the BTK killer, but Tinge has an idea. He wants to talk to Kevin Bright, who's the survivor of a 1974 killing by the BTK killer. His sister was murdered. He was the only witness to any of these killings. He's the only one. And the problem is he's super messed up as a result of his experience. He was shot in the face by the BTK killer. He requests that no one look him in the face. They have to meet somewhere secret, like in a parking garage. It's like a deep throat type of situation. Very, very chilling stuff. Later on, it's time for our first interview of season two with a serial killer. And I was stoked for this one. It's the son of Sam, a.k.a. David Berkowitz.
I will say, the scene interviewing, what was his name? Kevin, right?
Kevin!
That was a tough one, man. Listening to him go deep on the description of what he experienced was
not good.
Difficult. Had me squirming a little bit.
Yeah, because it shit happened.
This show
it's
will,
real.
And that's one thing about this show. It's like it's actually pretty light on like the full on like a gore.
It is, yeah.
But it's still. I mean, sometimes just like hearing about it,
it'll take you there, dude.
It's one of those kind of. It's kind of like that horror thing of like what they don't show you is actually even worse sometimes.
Yeah, this was a very creative and cool way to put more. Because when we're seeing the BTK killer, right, he's almost like pathetic,
right?
Like you're like, oh God, this fucking sicko.
Yep.
But this paints what the things he was able to do, the things he was capable of, and how horrifying and how impact. He survived a serial killer. That would fuck you up pretty badly. His sister was murdered. He was shot in the face. Like, the impact that these serial killers had, that guys like the BTK killer had, the negative impact they had on society, on these victims, was horrifying. And that's why it became so important for a division like the behavioral science unit to exist to start to try to put a hamper on this type of shit, because there are mass, as we know from watching the show and as we're going to continue to learn, big time patterns and parallels between all these guys for the most part. Some of them are outliers. But anyway, the funniest thing about Berkowitz, he's the guy who killed 6 people, wounded 7 more between 1976 and 1977 before getting caught. It was just basically a spree. He had told people that he was possessed by demons and his neighbor's dog needed blood and that's why he did all the things he did. And it was kind of the big part. It was like the, you know, the crazy story around Berkowitz, the serial killer, the son of Sam. But Holden sees through that facade and gets Berkowitz to drop the act and admit that, like, nah, I actually just watched, like, The Shining, or not The Shining, The Exorcist, and then I read up on some shit about demons, and I thought it sounded tight, so I tied it to, like, my story.
Yeah.
That was cool. And it made me wonder if that happened.
That,
I have
same,
not looked into
same.
Whether or not.
I didn't have a chance to look that up, but you got to figure that that is something that that precipitated or transpired in some way. They had to have figured out that, oh, no, he wasn't actually... Like, that was a crock of shit.
Maybe. I mean, maybe.
Right?
The thing is...
Or you think they kind of made that up for the show? You think that's a fictional
I don't know. I need to go look into it because...
We need to, yeah.
It struck me that they could take some creative freedoms with some shit like that.
Yeah, though. They could.
You know what I mean? If they wanted to. Now, Son of Sam is a very, very, very famous serial killer.
Right.
So it'd be a little odd if they went that route. But also, it could be one of those things like where it was always maybe everybody sort of thought it was bullshit, but everybody bought into it because it was more fun and scary and spooky. And the show is bringing that to light. And then we get another look at the BTK killer to close out episode 2. He's sitting on the couch watching TV, and his wife brings him pillows and blankets because he's clearly not allowed to sleep in the bedroom with her anymore after masturbating in some kind of creepy clown costume or face mask. And
Yeah,
you're bleeding.
You're bleeding.
But she also drops 2 books off for him. And we only get to see one of them, and it's about sexual deviancy and sexual behavior. And she's clearly disturbed and upset with her husband's situation, and she wants him to get help. So she's giving him these books.
The good news is that when you are a sexual deviant, somebody giving you books so that you can help yourself out and correct your deviant behavior, that almost always works.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
Is just 1 or 2 books.
Yeah. Hey, you've got some devious behavior going on. Please read these books. I'd like you to fix that. Thanks.
The next episode, the shot we get of the BTK killer at the beginning of episode 3 finishing the book, and he's like, oh my God, I get it. I will not go on killing. And then that's the end of the BTK investigation. No. Episode 3. We find out there is a dead body of a child. Things start to escalate here pretty quickly. A dead body of a child was found in the Tinch's house, right? Bill's wife Nancy's house that she is selling specifically.
Not their actual house.
Sorry.
One that she is selling.
That they're selling, yes. She's a realtor, I guess, or some shit.
Uh-huh.
And she asked Bill to go over and to take her name and phone number off the for sale sign because she's concerned about how that could be perceived. Down in Atlanta, Ford meets up with Agent Jim Barney.
Down in Atlanta.
Is that a real song?
It's not Atlanta.
It's not Atlanta. Ford's down there to interview real-life criminals William Jr. Pierce and William Henry Hance. We get our first instance of his intellectual approach to criminals not working because these two guys are such dumbasses. They're just everyday simpletons who wanted to kill people because they're fucked up.
Yeah.
Basically. So Barney... This other guy, Jim Barney, steps in to assist with the investigation. He sort of uses his own deal, and he uses some sweet candies, some treats or whatever, to get these guys to talk. He goes to the simple stuff. Barney is like another Ford, right? But with different strategies and a different way of looking at things. But he has his ways, and he can connect with the prisoners and stuff. And it becomes pretty evident that Ford is upset Greg Smith, the rat, got hired instead of this guy who was also considered for the position, Agent Jim Barney. At some point, I can't remember the situation. I think it was like a diner or something. Ford flirts with that cute black girl, and she ends up asking him, like, do you want to go hang later? Whatever.
She's a desk. She's behind the front desk at the hotel.
Okay.
She shows him his room.
Got it.
Clearly, yeah, you can tell she kind of wants something, but you're not sure if she, like, needs some help on something or if she's kind of into him.
Yeah, it's the old school flirt with the cop, and then once you get him close, you tell him the problem you need him to solve.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Works every time.
It is classic. And, in old movies, I don't mean that's what I do in real life. That's never happened for me. It's in fact, never been attempted. But her name is Tanya. And Ford thinks he's going to get lucky. He's, like, stoked. And she takes him to a place, like a diner or somewhere, to meet these 3 mothers who each have a photo album with them. Each of their children is missing, and nobody cares because they're black. And this is the beginning of us delving into yet another aspect of the show that you brought up earlier, Barrett. It's the Atlanta child murders that took place in the 70s, where dozens of young black children went missing and were later discovered dead. So two of the mothers that we're meeting with here, they know their children are gone. One's still missing. They've called the police again and again. Nobody's looking into what's happening or how to stop it. So obviously Tanya realized Ford was someone who dealt with multiple murders, and she realized he might be able to help. So that's why she brought him here. And this is cool. I'm glad this is another thing. It's like kind of cool to bring it into the loop of the story or whatever. So in looking into all this, Ford goes with Barney, Agent Barney, to meet with a semi-retired detective in Atlanta to help them better understand these child murders taking place. And Ford finds maybe these murders, basically what is presented to him there is maybe these murders aren't so statistically special, right, is what this cop tries to sell him on. And he relays that information back to Tanya, who is obviously clearly upset and not going to accept that. He promises to look back into it once he's at Quantico. She's not hearing it. She storms away. He leaves for the airport. And that is that. But the point is we're beginning the Atlanta child murders. And that is one. Well, not one, unfortunately. That is a group of murders that I don't know that much about. And I am, obviously, it's an exciting one to tackle in 2019, where for the very same reason that it wasn't treated with the attention it needed to be during the time it was happening, it wasn't treated with the attention it probably should have been many years since. And now we're becoming more sensitive to the fact that a lot of crimes and things that African-American communities had to experience, nobody ever fucking found out about.
Yeah,
because nobody in the authorities gave a shit. So it's just another interesting thing for them to tackle on Mindhunter. As I mentioned, the only real development with Carr in the first three episodes is that she's on the prowl as a single lady, and a female bartender has caught her eye.
There's been some tension going on between Carr and Tench. I believe that is because at the end of season one, Bill accused her of being the one to be the rat.
Yes.
So there seems to be some lingering.
There's also something weird with her sexuality in him going on too.
You think
like
so?
The fact that she's a lesbian bothers him somehow. Or maybe it's, I don't know if it's that it bothers him. It's something that maybe just makes him uncomfortable.
He's weirded out by it.
He hasn't become completely okay with gay.
Does he know that?
Does he know she's a lesbian? I don't know if it's overt, like information he has up front, or if it's something he has sensed. But I just get these weird moments of awkwardness, that awkward tension you mentioned.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think it's coded with he's like not sure he's like maybe it's that he knows she's hiding something, or that there's something different about her and he can't tell what it is.
Maybe. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Maybe so,
but something between them, it doesn't fucking click. And that's why they have those weird moments.
Yeah. Yeah. Because anyway, that's something that's going on too.
Another dynamic for sure. And then at the end of episode three, in Kansas, our killer is in the library drawing sketches of women.
Freaky shit.
In bondage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Freaky deaky. Real freaky naughty. And one of the librarians comes over to be like, hey, bro, it's closing up. And so he takes his drawings and he goes. How are you feeling so far, three episodes in Mindhunter season two?
Yeah, like we talked about. I mean, episode three definitely feels like a bit of a jumping off point here.
Yep. It was the diving board.
Yeah.
It was the high dive.
It does. I do get that feeling. So I'm looking forward to see where they go with that. Again, like this, like they have created a very cool, you know, visual language here of showing these guys interact with the serial killers.
Right.
And it's fascinating to watch you know, and that's just that's. That's all there is to it. It's dark. It's creepy. It's crazy to think about the fact that somebody like the BTK killer can even exist. Like,
yes.
How do those thoughts manifest in one's mind? It is just wild. And, you know, it's the fact that the show is thought-provoking in that manner that I think keeps it interesting no matter what. I expect that the show, and I hope that the show gets a little bit more cohesive here in these episodes going forward.
I mean, and I think that's part of the thing is it's tough because the allure, one of the allures of Mindhunter as a setup, as a premise for a television show was, holy shit, cool. We'll get to go one by one through all the most famous serial killers in history.
Right.
But then they're finding all these other interesting things. Okay, well, now we can tackle the Atlanta child murders. Okay, well, now we can bring in like there's just all these elements of like, oh, what was happening politically or
sure.
whatever.
Yeah.
And it's sort of still deciding, I think, to your point that you've been making all podcast long, it's still kind of deciding what it wants to be.
Right.
Like, which one of those things is going to become the more important of the four or five that they're currently wrestling
with? Yeah, and I'm okay with all of them being important. They just feel very kind of like fractured.
It's a little choppy yeah. so far through three.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. This episode of OCC is also brought to you by Lisa. I would argue, as I say every week, your mattress is up there in terms of importance for purchases you could make for your home with your television. So if your mattress is kind of shitty, that is unacceptable. Do you even remember where your mattress came from? Do you wake up every morning feeling like you've won the lottery because your mattress is so damn comfortable? I do, on my hybrid, by Lisa. And you can join me. Lisa knows how important rest is to a better life. Lisa is the foundation of a healthier, happier you. And to Lisa, a bed is more than just a place to sleep. It's a place for relaxation and rest. All of their products have been thoughtfully designed to go beyond creating a comfortable bed to transform your bedroom into a sanctuary that you actually want to spend time in. Lisa's most advanced luxury hybrid mattress is the one that both Barrett and I have in our individual domiciles. It's made with premium foams and springs for enhanced pressure relief with edge-to-edge support, thoughtfully designed with the best of both worlds. It's the one I would recommend if you're picking the hybrid, most comfortable bed I've ever laid eyes or body on. It is phenomenal. Lisa believes all people should have access to deep rest and relaxation, and as such, they make it easy for their customers to know they've made the right choice through their social impact initiatives tied to each purchase. They donate one mattress for every 10 they sell through organizations that work in causes like foster care prevention. To date, they've donated more than 33,000 mattresses through more than 1,000 nonprofits. Lisa mattresses are made in the USA. In-home delivery and setup is available. Financing is also available. Don't miss out. Clam fam, live healthier, live happier, rest deeper. Order today and get 15% off any mattress for a limited time at lisa.com/dragon. Use the promo code dragon. That's LEESA.com/dragon. Promo code dragon. 15% off any mattress. Limited time. Keep in mind, you also get 100 nights risk-free trial plus free shipping and returns. Barrett, we ran out of time before we could dive into the whole of Dark Season 2 and how it ends.
Just
keeps happening.
Yeah.
Fucking bummer. So we'll have to wait for that next week, and that will do it for today's episode of OCC. Huge thanks to our sponsors again for supporting the show. Make sure you support them to support us, and if for some reason you don't need the greatest products known to man, which are brought to you by the sponsors of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, then you can support us directly, but as we mentioned at the top of the show, by going to patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, where in September we will be covering Secession in depth. We will be covering Part 2 as our movie club, The Righteous Gemstones, Season 1. And then if you're in the Mollusk Militia, our premiere tier on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Then you will also receive the Hotline Call Extravaganza in September as
which
well.
Which our first one. We're going to do that was Stranger Things only.
Yes.
Tomorrow,
we're doing our first week, will
be our first Hotline Call Extravaganza. So you'll get to see what that's all about.
For August. Yeah.
Indeed.
Uh-huh. So if you wanted to hop in now and get the August one as well.
That is true, yeah.
Come
yeah,
through,
yeah.
baby.
Upgrade.
Do it.
Be a premium boy or girl.
Follow us on social media for updates on the best in TV and movies. The best TV and movie content you're going to find on the internet, Instagram.com/oystersclamscockles, @oystersclamscockles on Instagram, @clamsandcockles on Twitter, Facebook.com/oystersclamscockles. I'm Ross Bolin, and you can follow me @WRBolin on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can listen to my other show, The Ross Bolin Podcast. Wherever you're listening to OCC, it is a comedy, very much humor-based show, but we also tackle very serious topics like mental health, addiction, substance abuse. We talk about serial killers a lot. There's a segment, a reoccurring segment that we do called Serial Killers You Haven't Heard Of, at least a couple of which were inspired by Season 1 of Mindhunter. I'm sure I'll dig a couple out of Season 2. Again, if you've got more time to listen to more shows and you want more me, the Ross Bolin Podcast is a place to be. Barrett, where can we follow you and hear more from you?
You can find me at Barrett Dudley on Instagram and Twitter. And then listen to the Club Cool Podcast, where we meet at the intersection of style and pop culture. Let's see. Last week, we discussed the Chicken Sammy Wars.
My God, they're out of control.
We talked a little fantasy football live draft because, you know, Ooh. Who's not in a fantasy league?
Ooh.
And then we covered some hot new fall drops that we're seeing. So a little bit of everything.
Clothing drops.
Yeah, right. Clothing, sneakers, all that. Actually, this was all clothing. But no, there were some sneakers too. Actually, I can't remember. You'll have to go listen to find out. Club Cool, wherever you're listening to OCC.
All righty then. Nice. Good shit. If you need more episodes of OCC this week, you know where you can get them. Patreon.com/oysters clams cockles. We'll be back next week. We will talk about Dark Season 2 at some point. I swear to God. I know it's become like a running joke. I've just gotten swept up in so many other shows, and it's very German, and it's very confusing, and I need a lot of time to process it, but we will be discussing it. That's it for today, though. Adios, muchachos.
Bye.